Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It is now time to bring in Brent Rollins from Pro Football Focus. You can follow him on Twitter at BRollinsPhD. And we first hooked up with Dr. Rollins here, thanks to our man Russ Tanner. And, Brent, we always appreciate you coming in and doing, or at least calling in and doing some statistical analysis for us. So we appreciate you giving us some time this morning.
You're very welcome. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
Looking forward to football.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously we'll talk some Falcons and we'll talk some college football here with the Dogs. And you guys over at Pro Football Focus do such a great job of not just analyzing the pro game, but also running the numbers on the college players who are getting ready to dive in to the pro game. So in terms of just a quick draft question for you, in terms of you guys' breakdowns on these players and your thoughts about them and how they project to the next level, who was the number one rated prospect in the NFL draft for Pro Football Focus for this past NFL draft?
For the past NFL draft,
yes.
It was Baker.
Okay, so it actually was Baker Mayfield.
Yes, and that was kind of a shock to some within the industry, but all the numbers, and we actually talked about this prior to the bowl game or to the semifinal game. He was basically at the top in all of these numbers that we have: completion percentage against pressure, against the blitz, and all the various things that we track. He was very well at the top for most all of them.
And that obviously caught some people off guard with the Browns taking him number one overall. But from Pro Football Focus's standpoint, you guys would think that the Browns made the best pick.
Yes, he was number one on our board. Darnold was second, and then a lot of the faces that you saw within the top 10, including Roquan, were the rest of the ones in the top 10 for us. Very similar. The only one who sort of fell, I guess, from our rankings compared to where they were drafted was Maurice Hurst from Michigan, and a lot of that was health, obviously, with a heart condition or some cardiac condition that he was diagnosed with. But outside of that, it was very, very similar to what we had.
And with Roquan Smith, obviously the Bears have had a long-standing tradition of having really good middle linebackers, and he feels like, at least from a ceiling standpoint, that he can be, at his best, right up there with, when you channel the name Mike Singletary, that means something. But a lot of people think that he can kind of fall in that same class if he has the career, the type of career that people think he can.
I completely agree. And to me, he projects much like what you see with what we have with the Falcons with Deion Jones. As his speed is game-changing, his ability to play coverage, which a lot of the things that we do and a lot of the data that we run, and we're starting to get into more predictive type things, and what's value is how much coverage is valued compared to, say, playing the run. And his ability to cover, his speed in that area is going to be massively important in the NFL. And I think he's going to be great from day one.
Yeah, I remember there was a couple of different games. I think the Georgia Tech game in particular, because they move so laterally in their running game, that's where you really saw that game-changing Roquan Smith speed, because on a lot of those pitch plays and those outside option runs, he was just there so quickly, like on a line, like almost like a rocket shooting out of shooting off a rocket there. It's just his ability to break to the ball is about as good, personally, as I've ever seen, and I'm sure that the numbers and everything back that up.
Yes, very much so. He was one of the leaders in defensive stops for us, one of the leaders in coverage skills and rating his coverage for us, so that definitely backs that up. And from Georgia's perspective, given all the players they had drafted, he is the singular player who you look at and you say, I don't really have one of those. The rest, everybody else that got drafted, I think Georgia can look at this year and be like, I have that. or I can replace that possibly even with a more talented, just sheer talent, not talking about experience and or sort of the, that type of intricacy, but from a talent perspective, he's the one who you look at and you say, all right, that guy I need to, and I don't find many of those.
Now, you look at the running backs that were selected. Obviously, Saquon Barkley went number one, and then there was a pretty big drop-off to Rashad Penny at number 27 for the Seahawks. Sony Michel goes 31 to the Patriots. Nick Chubb goes 35 to the Browns. I scratched my head on the Rashad Penny one. You know, he played at San Diego State, put up big numbers, but, you know, these big numbers happened against defenses that were nowhere near what Sony Michel and Nick Chubb were seeing on a week-in, week-out basis. So was there something I was missing? Was there some sort of trend or analysis or something that Rashad Penny should have been taken ahead of Georgia's two running backs, or do you think Seattle reached?
I don't think it was a reach. I will say that. He was our second highest-graded running back and sort of led the draft class in terms of broken tackles and ability to make big plays off of breaking tackles. I think a lot of that was fit, and I think Seattle saw a fit and a, you know, Marshawn Lynch 2.0 type back, and that helped in that case for him getting drafted there specifically. But in terms of where he was stacked against the rest of the running backs, he was our second rated running back.
Talking to Brent Rollins, you can follow him on Twitter at @BRollinsPhD. Does stuff for Pro Football Focus. And one of the things I want to ask you about, you know, with the Falcons, they draft Calvin Ridley, and he's a receiver, obviously, that I think projects more to be that sort of slot type, kind of the perfect replacement for a Taylor Gabriel, especially with what the Falcons have in Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu on the outside. But in terms of, like, grade out, how did Ridley do, and do you think that was a good pick for Atlanta?
I think it was a great pick, actually. And there, one of the things with Atlanta, and since Dan Quinn has got there, and that was sort of, it was my issue with the team prior to him arriving, was they needed to upgrade 1 through 53. And since he's been there, they have upgraded 1 through 53 immensely. So the depth of their roster and the talent on their roster, and they've hit on so many draft picks recently, that allowed them to be in that position to take, all right, best player available. And at this point, he was our highest graded receiver. And I think one of the things you'll see, I think what you said about him being in the slot, I think you're going to see a lot of that. He was excellent there at Alabama. We ran an article prior to the draft about just how open Ridley got. And it's not necessarily because of a scheme or because of, you know, bad defense or something of that nature, but it was the intricacies of playing the receiver position that he very much excelled at. His route running was very much a, you know, seasoned veteran type route running, and I think in the slot you'll see him excel there, and I think it'll be a great upgrade for them offensively, plus given the fact that you might not see Julio as much.
Yeah, that's
season,
true.
Or hopefully. That's not the case, but we'll see.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you a hypothetical about that. Say Julio Jones were to hold out and, like, not play, you know, for the Falcons this season. Obviously, that's probably not going to happen, but this is just for the purposes of this discussion and having a little fun here. How much of a percentage, I don't know if you have this, like, readily available or whatever, but I guess try to make it that way if you don't have an exact percentage, but how much of their offense are they losing? And I think it's more than just Julio's numbers itself. It's the ability to spread the ball around with the attention that Julio gets.
The second point you made there is the biggest, about the attention that he receives. Now, just in terms of him, he's a freak of nature. He's the third. He was, I think, third on our sort of top 50 player rankings. He's done things in the receiving game from our metrics, like yards per route run, that nobody else does and nobody else has done, at least on a consistent basis year over year. But and from the Falcons' perspective, like you said in the second piece, it's the threat of him. Like, for example, with him on the field, on passing plays, yards per play, they were first.
Wow.
On running plays, they were fourth with him on the field. Now you take him off the field, you were first in passing plays, yards per play. Now you go back to 15th with him off the field.
Sheesh.
On running plays, you go from fourth back to 27th.
Oh, my gosh. So were you surprised
then?
It's
not so much him. It's the threat of him.
Exactly, exactly. So were you surprised then that, you know, with all the stuff that came out, like just from looking at those numbers, that the Falcons were so kind of steadfast and you know, there's budgets and all that stuff, but for them to have kind of said, we're not going to, you know, appease him with this money. I know this isn't really y'all's expertise getting into the heads of these people, but just in terms of the amount of offense that he is responsible for, the fact that they wouldn't, you know, at least, you know, try and make him a little happier, I guess.
I think that's more of an organizational philosophy than anything. And
right.
That's, you know, just sort of me watching it from the outside that, you know, hey, we're going to take care of you, and we did take care of you 2 years ago, and we're going to look at your contract maybe after this season kind of deal, and I think that's what came out. But I was actually kind of glad to see that they did that, because you don't want to set that precedent moving forward when you have young, very sort of star-esque type players like a Deion Jones, you know, like a, you know, whatever Ridley might become, like Devondre Campbell that's going to be coming up, like Robert, you know, they just got assigned Robert Alford, but like Grady Jarrett, these young guys who are getting ready to be, you know, up for bigger type money, and then you set that precedent, that sort of, from an organizational philosophy standpoint, maybe not necessarily the best thing. But the thing with Julio, and this is, to me, this is the one thing in his game. We always talk about his lack of, you know, why don't they just throw it to Julio in the red zone, things of that nature. But there's a lot of data and just watching that shows that him in the red zone, him in, you know, from a catching touchdowns perspective, that's always looked at and talked about. There's data to back that up that it's just not an effect. He's not effective in that world. For example, inside the 10 last year, he had 2 touchdowns on 14 targets, so 14% success rate. Versus, you know, Ryan throwing to others. He had other people when he was throwing the ball inside the 10. He had 25 targets. That equated to 12 touchdowns, or 48% success. So almost 3 times more successful throwing to someone else other than Julio.
Is that on Steve Sarkisian to fix?
I think a lot of that is a yes. And especially in the red zone, where creativity matters because the windows are much, much tighter, especially in the NFL, for that matter, too. But yes, there's some data that backs up the fact that he's not necessarily the strongest red zone target. Even Ryan's completion percentage in his career, throwing to Tony Gonzalez in the red zone, it's almost 60% completion. Throwing to Roddy was almost 50% completion. Throwing to Julio is 28% completion in the red zone.
Wow. That's why, you know, maybe they weren't so, you know, super gung-ho to give him that money because, you know, he's not really effective down in that part of the field, which is where almost, you know, you have to be effective to win games.
And they were sort of the king, you know, they were the field goal Falcons last year. And that, you know, that if they turn cut one or two more of those, or at least one per game, you know, then their points per game, their offense, it looks entirely different. They feel so much better about themselves. But it's going to be interesting to see because they have a loaded roster. I think we did a ranking article for ESPN Insider recently, and we had them as the number 2 overall roster in the league.
Wow. Brent, I wanted to ask you about going back to the draft. You know, you see players like Lamar Jackson fall all the way to number 32. I thought Minkah Fitzpatrick falling to 11, great value for those teams. In terms of, like, you guys' ranking and stuff, who do you think got the best value pick in the first round, and could it be, you know, Lamar Jackson falling all the way to Baltimore at 32?
Well, overall, the best value pick, just based upon our rankings, was the Raiders taking Hurst in the 5th round.
Okay.
But that's just because again, that was the health part. But outside of that, I think one interesting pick was Landry falling toward the latter part of the first. Harold Landry from Boston College falling to the latter part of the first round. We actually had him rated ahead of Bradley Chubb, who went 5th.
Wow.
To Denver. So, because Landry's sort of top end edge rushing game had much higher grade and much more from a productivity, and plus his measurables were a little bit more impressive. than Chubb's. So that was probably one of the good value picks for us from our perspective.
All right,
and
Brent.
Isaiah Wynn. That's another one, by the way.
Oh, wow.
He was a good value pick.
Yeah, and him falling was certainly interesting. And, you know, that brings up kind of switching gears to the Georgia element of all this. You know, we talked about this a bit earlier, but kind of like that Julio question I posed to you with, you know, if the Falcons lost him, what are they exactly are they losing? Kind of go a little further in depth on Roquan Smith and just explain what exactly Georgia is losing in terms of the data.
In terms of the, it stops, and what we look at, we call these things defensive stops, and what that is basically a play, the offensive play, or specifically a running play, a lot of times that the defense or the offense loses, that the defense, you make a solo tackle, and the offense is put in a negative yardage situation, or it's a, you know, no gain, 1 yard gain, that sort of thing. Roquan was one of the tops in the country in that. Solo tackles that led to sort of a loss for the offense. I think it was in the 70s that he had in terms of defensive stops, which was upwards of the tops in the nation. So, you know, that is the biggest thing from him. And in addition to what we talked about earlier with the coverage. And the other piece that maybe gets lost in the facts for Georgia, Roquan was their leading sacker.
I hadn't even realized that.
The highest sacks on the team. And in terms of those sacks, I think it was somewhere around 8. But in terms of how many actual pass rush snaps he had, a number that we use called pass rush productivity, which is basically looking at how many sacks do you get or how many pressures do you get on a per snap basis. Because we're going to talk to you, or got another one about DeAndre Walker versus others too. But Roquan had 8 sacks on 55 pass rush attempts,
and that's probably a lot lower than like your run of the mill pass rushers, right? I mean, the guys that are designed to do that every play, because he's obviously not.
Exactly. For example, Davin Bellamy had 266 pass rush snaps.
Gosh,
and he only had 6, and he had 6 sacks. So, you know, Roquan, now granted, obviously where he's coming from, he's in the inside. He's more of a blitzer when he's rushing the passer. But he led them in sacks. If he's going, he's getting there, basically. And that's one thing you're going to miss. Because the edge pressure, like we had, I think with my comment earlier, that in terms of a talent perspective, like Davin Bellamy and Lorenzo Carter were great, experienced players. Carter had massive moments, Notre Dame, Auburn, you know, those sort of plays were there. But on a per snap and a consistent basis, they didn't get pressure on the quarterback like others on the team. Like DeAndre Walker, for example, I think from a pass rushing perspective, talent-wise, he had 26 total pressures in well over half the pass rush snaps that Bellamy had. Bellamy had the same number of pressures, 26. So from a talent perspective on the edge, I think Georgia's going to be just fine.
So you just finished talking about Roquan Smith and what the Dogs are losing and not having him this year. Slip to the other side of the ball. We obviously know that Chubb and Michelle were the greatest running back duo we've ever seen. What kind of drop-off should we expect from the backfield now that they're gone?
Again, this might be the most unpopular opinion of all time, but not as much as we might think.
Okay.
You can't undersell the experience factor, the leadership factor, all the ancillary qualities that Sonny Michel and Nick Chubb provided. And I think having two of them is the biggest key, is the both of them being there, keeping each other fresh, as opposed to one guy having to tote that load on a consistent basis. This season, I mean, it's you have DeAndre Swift, who, again, from a talent perspective, might be just as talented, if not more talented, than the other two.
Right.
Just from a sheer eye test, this guy looks like an NFL running back type. But it's the second guy. As long as they get the second guy to come in and not carry that load on one individual person, I think they're going to be just fine. And plus, you know, there's all sorts of ancillary factors with that. improvement of the quarterback, offensive line, possibly even being even better, things of that nature. But, for example, just DeAndre Swift. He was over a half a yard and one of the top 15 in the nation last year in terms of yards after contact per attempt. Over a half a yard better than Chubb and Michelle. So you might not think about that with him because he wasn't as big as those two, but he was still getting more yards after contact than both of them on a per attempt basis.
Brent, one more question for you before we let you go here. Brent Rollins, Pro Football Focus. You can follow him on Twitter, at B. Rollins, PhD. In terms of just, the talent of the teams in college football, where does Georgia rank for you guys in terms of the grades?
Second to none.
So going into the season, it's obviously probably Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Ohio State, Oklahoma. These are some of the top teams, and you're saying Georgia, talent wise, is on par with any of those.
I completely and utterly agree with that. Yes, I think personally, my opinion, I think you're going to see almost a carbon copy of last season. I think Georgia, Clemson, Alabama, I think will be three of the four teams in the end. And then the fourth, somebody will be fighting for that fourth spot. But on a talent, overall just sheer talent basis, and even from our grades, looking at just individually at our grades, some of the people who will come into getting a lot more playing time this year, for example, Richard LeCount at safety, had a higher grade than Dominic Sanders. And I think from a talent perspective, you could possibly even say that he just has that look of a – talented football player. Now, does that translate into consistency? Does that translate into no bonehead mistakes, things like that? That's yet to be seen. But from a talent perspective, you have the incoming class of freshmen that are just going to even add to that. So it's an embarrassment of riches right now for the Dogs, that's for sure.
Doc, that sounds great. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it. And we'll do this again soon, hopefully, before the season gets fired on up.
Sounds good. Anytime. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. That was Brent Rollins, Pro Football Focus. Follow him on Twitter at B. Rollins, PhD.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.